Well, hello once again. This is Christian Corley. You are listening to Casterbris, and in a few moments you'll hear me chatting with James McLean. And this is the third part of a long discussion in which we examine the landscape of television in 2025 compared with 2005 or 1996 or 1989 when Doctor Who was last cancelled. Obviously, I'm not saying it's being cancelled on this occasion, but then again, it wasn't officially cancelled on that occasion either. And our aim here is to explore what opportunities there are for Doctor Who moving forward. Does it still have a place in our televisual landscape? That's the big question here. So, if you recall the last episode, we were discussing how long there is between seasons of long-running shows these days, and how maybe Doctor Who isn't an outlier in this regard, although it would seem to be enjoying a slightly longer break than some other shows. I mean, a key example of that is the gaps between series on House of the Dragon. For me, there was a series last year, there wasn't a series the year before that. There's no series this year, there's a series next year, and I think that's going to be the final series. And really, three series over 6 years, that's when you've got, I mean, you can also just go on Netflix or Disney Plus or whatever and watch procedurals, and they churn out like 26 episodes a year. If things like, you know, I mean, it's not on anymore, Bones or Castle or a show that is still on, NCIS. There's like 26 episodes a year of these shows. And it does make you... So there's been a shift in that, hasn't there? Because, I mean, NCIS is still on, but I think it's the only one that's really still like pumping them out of those sort of, that sort of generation of shows. But in terms of fantasy and culty stuff, and sci-fi, why do you think that is? Do you think that's down to the production demands?
I assume it's because they still carry a strong broadcast. It's not a word that really works on the American model as much, but you know, that they sit within broadcasting spaces. That's still the same framework. I guess that's why they, and the way that they distribute and are sold as packages, still that model still has value, but I can't see it lasting. I mean, I'm not sure. I wasn't aware how many of those are still doing the 22, 26.
I think NCIS is, but it was shortened during the striking periods. I think they're trying to get it back to what it was.
Given that was the model for virtually everything, whether it was drama, comedy, a series would be that. You think how many in the American market are still doing that? You know, it's very, very...
Yeah, it's definitely strong.
It's funny, you think of like Star Trek, you know, at one point was always like the 26, you know, Star Trek Next Generation was what, 7 seasons of like, you know, 20 odd episodes per season. And now Strange New World has been, it's just had its third, hasn't it? Its fourth is in, I think the third and fourth done back to back has been given the fifth, but the fifth is 6 episodes.
Wow.
You know, and that's, that will end it on 6
also,
episodes.
Also, that's kind of a British way of doing things as well, isn't it?
Because
British shows and dramas have always been far shorter, whether sitcoms or drama series. Actually, I was, nothing to do with anything that we've spoken about. There's an interview with Connie Booth in the Radio Times about Fawlty Towers, because it's 50 this month. And she, it's a very short interview because she doesn't talk a lot, but she basically wants to emphasise the fact that she didn't write any of the dialogue. So they worked together on plotting, and then Cleese did all the dialogue. So, so that was interesting to just to learn after all this time. But,
But I wonder if one of the reasons that you're not doing the 20s, I know people say, oh, it's time and it's money, but I wonder in terms of streaming culture, whether statistically people engage in a show, but they, maybe some of them, it's rare for, in certain types of show, for them to actually, if you did 20, they'll watch like 8 episodes and then maybe there's a drop off.
Right.
In terms of, so why make shows with 20 if there is like a sort of threshold of audiences which maximizes around 8 to 10 episodes? So that becomes your base mark on streaming. Unless it's, you know, a real I mean, we talk about binge culture, but those sort of, in terms of the costs to the amount of audiences,
yeah,
I wonder if that's a fact. I don't know, but I must admit, when I've watched on Netflix shows, sometimes if you watch like Korean shows, they will, television will tend to be like 16, 17, 18 episodes. Some of them could be like varying between 60 and 90 minutes per episode. I find it a hard slog after episode 10. I kind of feel like I'm done with this story. I'm ready to move on.
Interesting, and if that's the case, say episode 10, because I've just looked up Only Murders in the Building. All five series have 10 episodes. I'm just checking. Right, House of the Dragon, first series 10 episodes, second series 8 episodes. So I think that is the that's all 8 to 10 sort of area. I think you might be onto something there, yeah.
Because if people aren't, I mean, I suppose it could be different when you're managing to get shows out airing each week. But I suppose, and again, I'd love to know where the inside data is on this and whether this is a factor. But I'm just thinking as an audience member, when you know there's other things to watch.
Yeah.
So you're not just having to sit and watch the same thing every night. I wonder whether that's a factor in it. It's like, people go, why do we not do 20 episodes anymore? It's like, perhaps it's because, and it was the same with traditional television, you know, the drop-offs, which would mean, that's why you get to what it's about in the stateside is a 13 episode, episode 13, 12, 13 is when you'd have your mid-season break.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, things are considered about, you know, whether this comes back or not. I wonder if those are reflected in a culture now, which is so saturated with television that the risks of doing 20 are just not worth it. Why run a 20 episode order when you just have no idea whether they're even going to get past where the drop-off's going to occur by episode 8 and they're going to be onto the new thing. They're not going to wait out.
Yeah.
And it's just not worth the cost.
Winding back to 2005 when Doctor Who returned, that sort of mid-season break, it had like a mid-season relaunch, didn't it? It had a big episode, a sort of tentpole episode in the middle. So the first two series, first series was the Dalek episode. Second was when they went out into the planets in space. The devil,
yes.
The beast thing.
Yes. Yeah,
St. Peter and that, et cetera. That big two-parter in the middle. And those were 13 episodes long. Now, over time, Doctor Who has shrunk its season length. It's been kind of gradual, and it's probably followed the production demands and changes in the industry, etc. But it is now down to this point where it's... Where was it, the last episode? Last series was 10 episodes, was it? Or 12?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. 10? Can't remember. It wasn't 12, I'm sure.
No, I don't think it was as many as 12. So... And in the UK, I mean, when it was 13 seemed a lot of episodes in 2005. And then you looked at what America was doing, and you get, you know, 20, 24, 26 episodes a run. So it didn't seem quite as many. But there's always been this thing in the UK where seasons run a lot shorter. So, and this is why I mentioned Fawlty Towers earlier, because, you know, there's two series of six. Episodes, sitcoms have always run to. I mean, I watch Modern Family quite regularly because it's good sitcom, it's good characterization, it's good to learn from. I think there's 20 episodes per season or whatever, but they're all like 22 minutes long or whatever. So they come out quite regularly, but you know, sitcoms quite hard to write, so there's a lot of effort goes into the production of these shows. And I mean, again, I mean, that goes back to our initial sort of gambit with this, which was the sort of long running things and seeing people, you know, change and develop through a long running thing. It's not on anymore. Thank you very much for listening to our conversation thus far. It continues next week. James and I will focus more specifically on Doctor Who in the next edition. Remember, if you've subscribed to our Patreon, you've already heard all of this. This entire conversation went out first on our Patreon, where you can also get nice bonuses from the Casterbus archive materials that have been long forgotten or never even seen before, such as an interview with Pip Madeley, the internet gif maker, which is a very, very simple way of describing his amusing work. So, so head on over to our Patreon at that's patreon.com/Casterbus. And for regular articles, head to casterbris.substack.com. Well, if we go back to Doctor Who, if there was a position where Doctor Who ends, he tries desperately to get back to the point. If there's a position where Doctor Who ends and then someone decides that they're going to bring it back. God, this seems so contrived now after an hour of talking. What? How do they do that? Do they reboot it completely? Do they think this is a brand new show? Let's take some basic elements and just continue. Do they completely ignore what's happened before? And do all these other things that we've spoken about, or how do these other things that we've spoken about, the influence of AI, the impact of AI in creative fields, the way that television is changing, and even if do we really need to call it television anymore? How do these things feed into something where you're in the position of taking an existing show or property and reviving it, essentially, for a new era, when you don't know what the new era is? The technology that you've got is very much kind of nascent, and the audience is constantly changing. Is that something that you can do, or does that not just exemplify everything that we've just discussed about everything being in flux, hey, and it very much being a case of, Because as we've spoken before, like with movies, they have to know what's going to be happening. Then they need to be aware of trends, etc., a few years down the line when they're producing movies, because that's when the movie's going to come out. It's the same in some ways with music as well, although it's possibly a bit of a easier gamble with music. With a TV show like Doctor Who, with a big cult following, can you kill off a 62-year-old TV show and then continue with something new, bearing in mind that that is something that Marvel has done, not just in terms of the comics, but essentially the cinematic universe is essentially that in comparison with the comics. I'll stop talking.
No, I think, well, you know, I talk all the time, so it's good. But I suppose the thing that we've not talked about in the room, which we should have talked about, because I think it is an interesting indicator of what, in an ideal world, streamers want, is South Park. I mean, South Park's, you know...
Obviously,
ignoring some of the recent controversies aside, but the deal for South Park for Paramount, that was a big amount of money which was paid, because streamers, ideally, they want content.
Yeah.
So funnily, while we keep talking about the 6 and the 8, for them, they want libraries of stuff, because, as we know, Friends, South Park, these long-running seasons, you know, of, as you say, 20, 26 episodes per season, 7, 8, 9 seasons, that's a lovely amount of content that people watch in the library and maybe rewatch again.
Yeah.
So they want, we say they don't, you know, that we can't imagine there being a show going for 60 years. A streamer would love a long-going show that would last for 60 years of content. So there is that side to it, and which is why I think when we've talked about like Doctor Who and Disney and the idea about would they want the back catalogue, I think in the current market, yeah, if they felt that catalogue would be watched by a modern audience, then yeah, they would want, because you want this catalogue. We've seen it with Marvel. You talk about Marvel and DC, the way they've tried to connect in the last 5-7 years, connect older iterations, No Way Home with the Spider-Man, with the Flash, with the Batman, yeah. And you know, trying to connect all these universes together to sort of expand their properties, in a sense, to make them bigger. And so, yeah, it's a weird one. So with Doctor Who, I don't know. I'm at a stage now where I'd be quite excited for a reboot of Doctor Who. I love the idea, depending on how it was done. But I love the idea of just trying to start again now and just see what you would do differently and how that would work. I'd like to see a version of An Earthly Child, which wasn't exactly the same, but took that basic concept of, you know, 2 or 3 people wandering into this crazy world with this person and just seeing how that works. Now, we've had soft reboots of that.
Yeah.
But I suppose as an audience, we always see it as we're never... we're never truly, we're watching Paul Mackey or Bill go into the TARDIS for the first time, not as a companion to them, but as a companion to the Doctor. We know what the TARDIS is. We know who this person is. We know what they've been doing of late. But to actually go in as with the companion for the first time and kind of not know what's going to go in there, kind of know what this person's going to be, because they could be very different. William Hartnell was very different to where Shooty Gatwell was by the end of it. That could be exciting. And it's like with Star Trek when they did the Chris Pine films, and same with Discovery and the same with Strange New Worlds. Part of the frustration for me is like you're trying to sandwich this into a world which already exists. And that's kind of frustrating because I'm now constantly looking at it within that framework. It'd just be nice to see it as a brand new, fresh framework where I don't have to think about the past. Would that work for Doctor Who? I don't know. Like we said, it comes back to this thing being actually more special than I think we give credit for, even as people have been talking about it for like 16 years, 15, 16 years. It's an incredible thing when you think about it. A show which literally soft reboots itself every now and then as part of its ongoing structure is incredible. And that's how it survives. So would it be a good idea to do, or could it do like comics have done, you know, where you've had Ultimate Spider-Man or Ultimate X-Men and actually do a separate continuity?
Ultimate Doctor Who.
Ultimate Doctor Who, where it's, you know, starts from scratch, but you still carry on the traditional line. Because it seems crazy to me in a world where, which demands content, that you would gate and sort of say that content's now old. You want to sort of say, no, this content is kind of new, which is, again, clever thing that Davis was trying to do with those, the War Games and the Daleks, was trying to sort of go, hey, look, young people, watch this content. We'll edit it a bit. We'll add some new music in and some new effects to make it more digestible, but it's still relevant. And that is a good idea. So yeah, I don't think we should be trying to kill the main continuity. I think, but we could be doing separate things alongside. As you said at the very beginning, Nth Doctors, why not?
Yeah.
And exploring the world in a different way.
Going back, what year is it? 2015. Going back 35 years. The Leakley Bible was brought to mind when you were saying that about redoing Unearthly Child, which was a piece of show building by a chap called, I'm going to say Leakley because I've forgotten his name. This is the precursor to the Paul McGann TV movie, if you're unaware of this. And the Andrew Leakley created a show Bible for Philip Seagal. And the idea of this was, I'm just going to quote from an article by Alex Garrett on Lavazzi. A young Time Lord known as the Doctor discovers that he is the son of the famous explorer Ulysses. When his enemy, the Master, becomes Lord President of Gallifrey, the Doctor takes off in his TARDIS to find his long-lost father, determined to restore peace to the universe. He is, just hold your nose for this bit, he is assisted on his travels by the spirit of Barusa, who lives in time crystals that power his machine. Now, the Bible goes on to list some adventures that were essentially, it says here, retellings of classic Doctor Who serials, such as The Demons and Talons of Wang Chang and Sharda, even. This is all an interesting approach. And the danger, I think, is, I mean, I like this. I've always liked this, to be honest with you. I was never aghast at the notion of an Eighth Doctor or an Nth Doctor being a completely new show just within Doctor Who. Because, you know, at that time, the comics never really felt like the TV show. They definitely felt like they existed purely in their own world.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think the novels did as well. So it wasn't anything, this didn't seem offensive to me or, you know, it's not the sort of thing to set off a high energy music producer on social media into having palpitations or anything. It just seemed completely normal to me. And I still like the notion of, now there is a danger that maybe too many elements from what we know as Doctor Who might get picked up into one story, and maybe just, you know, having too many ingredients in a cake or whatever. But I like this notion. of starting from scratch and doing it all again. I don't think it's a... Is my mum going to care that the episode of Doctor Who that her grandchildren are sat watching is a remake of something that went out 60 years ago and has nothing to do with it in terms of the characters remembering that? No, she's not. She's average viewer. The only people
we had that with Human Nature, didn't we? To some degree,
yeah. The only people who are going to care are Doctor Who fans and people who've watched the show for a long time, and they might not like the idea of restarting. But at the same time, you're going to get the point where is there a reason to do this? Is there too much canon? Is it too heavy with the baggage, etc.?
But then there's some creative reasons to do it. I mean, if you think about, let's go back to Batman again.
Okay.
For the sake of it. Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns as a comic was a massive influence on the Tim Burton Batman movie. Burton Batman movie has massively influenced also the comics in the terms of how the Batman presents himself, the technology becoming greater impact, armor. And then that impacted on how the Graham Nolan films look. You know, Batman still wears eyeshadow in all his film iterations from the Tim Burton. Sometimes breaking out from a continuity can help you sort of... The Killing Joke, Alan Moore's very... It was Alan Moore, wasn't it? Brain is suddenly glitching and fearful.
Yes,
Alan
I think so.
Moore and, yeah, it was Alan Moore. Again, yes, it was massively influential. Sometimes, at the time, considered almost like a separate thing because it did some quite, you know, it shot Batgirl in a very gruesome and nasty and sexualized thing that happened in there. So it was kind of elseworlded, but then became part of the continuity of the main show of the main comics. And that was it. You know, these things. So sometimes having breakouts can be kind of good because it sort of steers. And I suppose the argument against them would be that Doctor Who kind of does this every now and then. It soft reboots to a point where it in itself is almost like a separate iteration of what's gone before. I think the issue I have with the Bible is while some of it's fine, Ulysses was actually then used in the New Adventures books. That did become the Doctor's kind of father in one iteration or another. But I think sometimes what makes Doctor Who work as a show is not its internal show history, but it's kind of like an anthology series with a person that you enjoy in each serialized thing, which again is like most detective shows as well. It's the same sort of thing. Is each murder is different. You look at Father Brown, and we talked about this before, it drives me up the wall that it's perpetually in 1953, even though it's had multiple series now. The same like The Simpsons, same logic there, you know, it stays. I think it's even had a New Year's Day. I'm sure it's still in 1953 in Father Brown. But the point being is that people don't care because they come to see a character they like do a similar sort of thing.
Yeah.
With another murder, the fact that this village has now had, you know, how many murders in the space of 1953 is inconsequential. It's the canon level of it's not important. And I think that gets lost with Doctor Who. And I think it still does get lost with Doctor Who, that it should really be about, and I'm not saying this as some sort of purist, but I feel in terms of how it works for casual audiences, is that there's a new weird adventure which plays within a different genre. So it's fresh each week, but has the same person in there that you like leading the story. So you feel like you've got an in and something that you're going to come in and enjoy regardless of where it goes.
Yeah.
And I think that is where Doctor Who is, in terms of keeping its longevity, exists. I think as soon as it becomes, as it has become ever since the Buffy model, sort of like a self-contained series, which is its own story in itself with its characters going back and forth within a very rigid framework of narrative plot points and locations, it loses that thing of being a vehicle for a story of the week. It occasionally does it, but it gets lost in the fact that you need to know a lot more to enjoy it, even within that series. And that's how it tries to keep you in that series. It keeps you thinking, oh, there's something else coming up ahead which makes sense of something I've just seen before. But I think shows which kind of exist, like if we look at the detective genre, exist because they're detached from that you're going in to see a good, fun pseudo sci-fi thing, and then you move on to the next one next week, but you've got the same characters you love. That's where it is. It's how the Carry On films, which I loathe, but I have been working with someone to build to do some research around them. They existed kind of because they were like a troupe, weren't they? You know, yep. different shows, different films, but people came because they liked the cast. They liked the ensemble troupe that would come and do the different parts. It was theatre. And I think, yeah, Doctor Who exists in that weird space, which it doesn't. It's almost been a little gentrified almost into the way that television is now. And it's lost. Perhaps that's what kept it going. But who knows? That, saying that, it's now been going almost as long as it was going before it was brought back. So who am I to say? And it's struggling now in the same way that it struggled back in 1988, 89. So who am I to say? Maybe this model does work. But yeah, I think for the listener, what we've been trying to say today is that I think there's a really interesting question of like, how would Doctor Who go if you did finish it now in this market, in this world, with massive libraries, saturated content, shortened attention span, not because people are stupid, just because of what they watch is different to how we used to watch things. And also, how would you do it? And I don't know what the answer is. But like you, I kind of like the idea of seeing something brand new and fresh. That you can't. Maybe there are no Daleks in this new version. Maybe it is no, you know, you there's no links to the old one. You could just go fresh again.
You don't need
again.
Daleks, do you? Daleks are based, you know, this is a very long podcast at the moment. But Daleks are... you know, 1960s post-war recovery bogeymen, aren't they? Essentially, yeah. We don't have that now. We would it would probably have Cybermen, and it would probably have shapeshifters or Zygons or something like that. Purely because of how we've seen how they can be adapted, for contemporary commentary. But aside,
from you could even have Ice Warriors. I feel like this is another podcast in itself because, you know, that whole idea of different cultures, some of them being quite militaristic, but still actually being cultures with their own values. And
yes,
same like Sea Devils, obviously, have this, and Silurians have relevance. But yeah, Daleks now, you know, and the sort of understanding of as you say, 20th century fascism and eugenics, it sits in a very different space now. And I don't think they kind of, you're right. They work in a way almost which is too good now. You know, if we sort of say that social media has made everything very binary, that everything's very fixed, I believe this, you believe that, and there's no middle ground. I guess you could argue Daleks are the exemplification of that. There is no middle ground with them. They are binary.
Yeah.
You know, you're either them or you're not. So maybe they do work, but I don't know if they narratively work, as you say, as an enemy, more as an allegory, maybe. I don't know. But yeah.
I think at this stage of our conversation, we need to throw it open to the listener. So do let us know what you think either on Facebook or email me, which is podcastderbus@gmail.com. Or if you're on Patreon, then drop us a line underneath this podcast and we will discuss it. If you're on Patreon, you get a video version of this as well. And you'll get the podcast earlier than everyone else and ad-free. So none of those adverts that you get on Spotify interrupting your enjoyment. As I say, get in touch. Tell us what you think about everything that we talked about, AI, Doctor Who, ending Doctor Who, restarting Doctor Who, all the things. It's a big podcast. And we'll be back for another one once we've finished editing this one. Until then, it's goodbye.